Welcome to Cairo Nights. I'm Jack Stein, sitting in for Mike Lewis this evening. Culture Hour. We try to talk culture as much as we possibly can, try to leave politics out of it, try to get away from all that, and just talk about what is going on with American culture. Some of it good, some of it bad. I will say that watching the Mars landing and just witnessing that was absolutely amazing. If you're not privy to that information, at 3:48 p.m. Eastern Time, controllers at the Mission Operations Center at NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory near Pasadena, California, received word from Perseverance that it had entered the top of the Martian atmosphere at a speed of more than 12,000 miles per hour. The spacecraft was beginning the landing maneuvers that would bring it to a soft stop in just 7 anxiety-drenched minutes. Now, if you don't, they can't communicate in real time with it. According to the article, it takes something like 11 minutes to travel the radio signals from the spaceship to us and then back again. So when it did land, it's just absolutely amazing. We got a quick clip of everybody celebrating and how happy they are.
Perseverance is going about 1 kilometer per second at an altitude of about 16 kilometers from the surface of Mars. We have entered heading alignment, which means Perseverance is no longer trying to control the distance to Mars, but to the target on Mars, but instead is flying straight to the target. 0.2 kilometers. Touchdown confirmed. Yes. Perseverance safely on the surface of Mars, ready to begin seeking the sands of past life.
Flight, I'll be moving in, showing you the safe zone that we've landed in.
For as happy as that makes me, it also fills me with dread, Shane. I get filled with a deep sense of dread whenever we talk about space or anything happens in space.
Why is that?
Well, because whenever I think about space, I get lost in this deep existential void. I go way out there and I start thinking about, well, what if they find little microbes that they're looking for, the fossils of little microbes out there, and what does that mean for us as human beings? Now, some people say that doesn't change much of anything. But if I think about all the planets around Jupiter, or I think about all the other star systems out there, I just get lost thinking about all of the things that could be out there, and that vast plane that's out there, and that human beings are not alone. I just go totally down this rabbit hole, and then I realize that I've been staring at my wall for 10 minutes, not getting anything done. Does that happen to you, Shane? You don't experience this deep sense of, I think they call it sonder, when you just are so far out there, you're just so far out there and what's going on that you lose track of what's going on with yourself.
I mean, I'd be lying if that hasn't happened at least once or twice, but I mean, I don't know, the space thing, I don't get that deep into it. I don't know why. I just feel like there's so much crazy stuff that I just don't understand, so I can just look at it and kind of admire it for what it is, but I really don't understand how it all works and really what is out there. So I don't know.
Or
I like
if it's
to keep
even real.
I don't know. I like to keep it like a big old mystery. Like I have really no clue what the honest to God truth is. I mean, we might be, you know, what's that movie with Jim Carrey? It's the Truman
Show. The Truman Show.
The Truman Show. We might be living in a world like the Truman Show. We might not know.
I was reading this afternoon about a planet that's in another solar system that is ice on the outside, but it has a diamond core, like a massive diamond core. At least they hypothesize that it's a massive diamond core. And it emits the sound of a gong, this huge sound every so many seconds. And I'm thinking to myself, how does something like that exist in our universe? It sounds like somebody just makes something like that up. I was also reading about another planet that has a volcanic structure on it that is so large that it tilts the entire orbit of the planet. So it's going in this weird, almost marble direction, this inconsistent direction. I think to myself, how could something like that exist in our solar system? How could something so amazing exist? And it just, it blows my mind. And the reason that I kind of wanted to talk about that story in particular is the last section of radio that I heard from Rush Limbaugh was him talking about that and talking about what it meant to him to be able to read about this and be fascinated about this. The last time I ever heard Rush Limbaugh on the radio was talking about this story and how he was looking forward to it. And it really struck me that the landing occurred and Rush died on Wednesday. It was just a really kind of an amazing a sequence of events. And it really got me thinking about Rush. And I spent the day after Rush Limbaugh died, I was on air. I was on the Todd Herman show in the morning, and I decided to dedicate the entire program to Rush Limbaugh because I don't think a lot of people know the impact that the guy had on the world of broadcasting. Now, I don't want to do it cliche and say, well, love him or hate him, he changed the industry. The guy was the greatest of all time. He was simply the greatest of all time, and he had a huge impact on me as a broadcaster, not necessarily from his content, but his philosophy on radio and his philosophy on entertainment and what it meant to be a news talk guy. We do not have the idea of alternative media without Rush Limbaugh. Hands down, he was the guy that did it first. He was the guy that went out there after the Fairness Doctrine was just completely eviscerated by Reagan. He went out there and said, listen, this is what I can do with AM radio. And he built something from nothing. This is a college dropout who built something from nothing. Absolutely amazing. He also didn't actually make it in his life until he was 37 years old. Setback after setback after setback. And his life was truly amazing. I did want to just go through a couple of highlights about this in terms of culture and what that means. Flags in Florida will be lowered for Rush Limbaugh. That's what Governor Ron DeSantis says. They're all going to be lowered at half-mast in tribute to Rush Limbaugh. I think that that's amazing. I think that's very appropriate, given for what he did for the country. Now, let's say that you hate Rush Limbaugh. You despise the guy. He was able to get people fired up about politics, which is inherently very boring. Government is inherently very boring. And he was able to get people fired up and interested in what was going on in their country. Here's Rush Limbaugh in 1988 talking about his philosophy around talk radio.
Well, you know, a lot of people, anytime I have found, anytime you express an opinion, half the people that hear it are going to disagree with it by law of average. If you embellish the opinion with confidence and cockiness, then you're getting into generating hatred and so forth. Because a lot of people would love to be confident about what they think. Most people aren't. Most people are trepid about their opinions. And if they are subjected to someone such as myself who's not, then it tends to offend them. But the key is knowing that nobody can get everybody to like them. Keeping in mind that the law of averages indicates that half the people who listen to you are not going to like you, you're still going to find a way to make those who don't like you enjoy listening to your program. And that is really the key to the entertainment value that the program contains.
When I was a little baby broadcaster, I came across that clip because it says, you know, Rush Limbaugh talks about how to be in talk radio. And I thought, oh, well, if you're going to learn, I should probably learn from Rush. And I heard that and it impacted me in such a way when he said most people are very trepid about their opinions. And I thought, yes, exactly. And maybe what we need to do in a society is to be much more confident in our opinions and then correct ourselves when someone presents us with better evidence. It's really a philosophy to live by. And another thing that he really touched me when I was a little baby broadcaster is from that same clip. Here's him talking about taking calls and that whole vibe of talk radio. Here's Rush back in 1988.
Records on a music station. You play the top 10. You don't take bad calls. You don't just sit there and open the lines and say, okay, what do you want to talk about? When you invest in callers, your whole hope or your whole chance for success, you're going to fail. You have to lead them. You can't get along without them, and I don't disparage them, but you can't let them control the show. And that's another thing different about WABC. For the longest time, I guess the people who have worked there, and some of them who still do, simply open the phones and deal with what they get. And so people are used to calling WABC and making speeches about whatever else. I want people calling because they're reacting to what is happening on my program, not what happened yesterday on somebody else's, not what happened on the guy before me. If I'm not stirring them up, and that doesn't mean being negative and pounding them, if I'm not making them compelled to call, I'm not doing my job, is the way I look at it.
Shane, when I was a little baby broadcaster, I was working at a radio station where the whole focus was phone calls, phone calls, phone calls, phone calls. The guy that owned the building said, if you are not having a good show unless I hear that you have a full board. He only wanted us to take phone calls, and it was terrible. It was awful. People would be calling in. They'd be talking about their grandmother who was secretly a lizard person. They'd be talking about the effects of 5G. They'd be talking about vaccines. It was a miserable, miserable place for me to be. And when I found that clip about Rush talking about that, it changed my whole dynamic on what it meant to be a broadcaster. Shane, have you ever been in that position on talk radio? You ever worked for a station where it's phone calls only? Phone call, phone call, phone call?
Thankfully, no. And when I worked in top 40 music, no. Yeah. We didn't do any of that either. I took in my whole entire time as a DJ over 3 years, I think I've maybe taken like two phoners.
Phoners can be, just to peel back the curtain a little bit, I'm sure Frank knows about this too, phoners can make a show or they can break a show. And Rush had this ability to take a phone call that was just terrible and turn it around and use the momentum of it. He was really just a master of the craft. And when I say that he's the greatest of all time, I say that with no sense of, it's not hyperbolic. He is literally the greatest broadcaster of all time. Then maybe Stern. It kind of goes down in that order. And if you're a radio person, even if you hate Rush Limbaugh, you have to recognize the man's skill and the man's talent keeping AM and FM radio alive, AM radio alive through to 2021 just through sheer force of will. It is an amazing, amazing feat. And his producer was out, he was on Fox the other day. A lot of people accused Rush of being a racist and a misogynist and a homophobe, and they don't know that his producer, Bo Snerdly, is a black man. Big old black guy. He's a huge black guy, and he's got this big, beautiful, deep voice that you never really got to hear because he was always behind the glass, always making sure the show was running. His name is James Golden, by the way, and he was, I feel compelled to play the entire clip of him talking about Rush Limbaugh and Rush's legacy. Here's what that sounds like.
Sean, we can't wrap our arms around this. We can't wrap our brains and our hearts around it, that our beloved Rush has returned his talent to God. And we are so thankful for him. You know, Rush is, to me, a second-generation founding father. This went beyond radio. This went beyond politics. What Rush did for America, one man changed so many trajectories in this country. When Rush began his career, there were 1,200 radio stations roughly doing the talk radio format. Today there are over 12,000. The number of print conservative publications, very few. Today it's a flourishing market. There was no Fox TV. There was nowhere on TV that you could get conservative ideology, that you could get the values that represent what most Americans believe, until Rush. He changed the media. He changed the landscape. Rush Limbaugh's radio show grew for over 30 years. This is unheard of. And our audience, from small children all the way up through the senior of senior citizens. And beyond all of those accomplishments, Rush Limbaugh was one of the finest human beings that you would ever want to meet. A generous, wonderful, beautiful spirit, humble, a gentleman, always, never failed to thank people for the smallest service that they could do to him, never looked down on people. It burns me to my soul when people sully his reputation with falsehoods, calling him a racist. This man was just an incredible phenomenon. And we love you, Rush. God bless you. And thank you, Sean, for having me with you to talk about Rush.
Shane, I've been having a debate now for 2 days since Rush Limbaugh died. And the debate basically goes like this. If you should not be speaking ill of somebody the day that they die. I don't care who they are. I think that we should be waiting ballpark at 48, 72 hours before you begin criticizing, before you begin coming down on somebody, before you start doing your hot takes or you start dunking on people, out of respect for the individual as a human being, regardless of the way that we feel about them, I think it behooves us as a culture to give people that space to just pass. And then we all say that's very sad. And then if you want to do your hit piece on that person a couple days later, fine, go for it. But at least give people 24, 48 hours before you lose your mind over somebody that you hate. Shane, where do you fall on that issue? Because I've been having a hard time with people who don't understand what it means to be a polite and kind individual.
Yeah, I mean, I just don't believe about bad mouthing the dead. I mean, if you had beef with somebody and then they pass on, I mean, the beef should just basically end there. I mean, especially even public figures, still at the end of the day, they're human beings. So I could really side with you, Jack.
I made a video about Ruth Bader Ginsburg the day that she died, and I spoke nothing about her policies. I spoke nothing about how I disagreed with her judicial decisions. I only talked about her life, and I was very critical of the media for deciding to talk about, oh, well, who's going to fill her seat? What's going on next? You miss the fundamental human nature of somebody when you decide to make it about that other thing, other than the fact that they were a human being with a life and they were loved by other people. But other people don't have that level of class, which, by the way, if you want to hear me go off on these people the day of, you can go to the Human Genius podcast and you can hear me use some very choice language for the people that decided to speak ill of the man on the day that he died. But here's CNN's Essie Cupp on CNN talking about Rush and her opinions.
Limbaugh made a career out of near constant controversies that were at their best provocative and at their worst downright sickening. Just some of the lowlights included that time he accused Michael J. Fox of faking Parkinson's. He promoted awful conspiracy theories from birtherism to COVID denialism to the big lie. He was a rank misogynist, calling Vice President Kamala Harris a hoe and feminist law student named Sandra Fluck a slut. He implied then 12-year-old Chelsea Clinton was the White House dog. He said feminism was established so as to allow unattractive women access to the mainstream of society. He was also openly anti-gay, performing a short-lived AIDS updates segment mocking the deaths of gay men in 1990. And of course, he was racist. When asked by a caller if black people should have a bigger voice on the issues, he said, "They're 12% of the population. Who the hell cares?"
All valid points, but she neglects the apologies that Rush issued. I mean, if you go back, Rush, over his career, did issue many apologies for certain things, whether saying, "I didn't know that people were going to take it that way." That segment that she refers to also about the AIDS countdown, he said, personally said that was the biggest regret that he had in his career, was making that joke. So again, people are much more nuanced and much more complicated than we might like to think. People aren't these kind of black and white individuals. And to go out and to say, well, let's try to encapsulate somebody in a half dozen statements and then make our determination on that, it's ridiculous and it's shameful. So I would like to submit to you that regardless of your feelings on Mr. Rush Limbaugh, he is the greatest of all time, and maybe exercise a little bit of decorum if you're talking about the guy over the weekend. I'm Jack Stein, sitting in for Mr. Mike Lewis. When we get back, we will be talking about some weird, weird news, including an army of parasitic wasps being released inside of a home, as well as a Florida man, a great, great Florida man, coming up after this quick break. Got to do a little weird news. I'm Jack Stein, sitting in for Mike Lewis tonight. Weird news out there, by the way. I know everyone's gearing up for COVID, but there is a story that just got me. I feel the heebie-jeebies on this one. I have terrible arachnophobia, terrible debilitating. It doesn't matter the size of the spider. I literally decompensate is a psychological term. It is something that I cannot handle whatsoever. My wife suffers from the same affliction, so there's often a massive debate over who was going to get the Swiffer to try to spear the spider off of the wall. I have modified it with duct tape, Shane. I've modified it so I'm like an old Neanderthal out in the wilderness trying to spear a woolly mammoth with my Swiffer. You got that mental image going. Only it's me in my apartment just trying to get a spider off the wall. An army of parasitic wasps has been deployed to battle moths inside of a British stately home. So an army of tiny parasitic wasps is already enough for me to not want, I want nothing to do with that whatsoever. But they will be unleashed inside of the English stately home where Anne Boleyn was born in order to hunt out and eradicate moths that threaten the mansion's furniture and artifacts. It is in northern eastern England, and it's been unable to contain an invasion of clothes moths, which are damaging the carpets, furniture, clothing, and other wool and silk objects inside the historic home. So, basically, the battle strategy goes like this. They put up these little boxes all over the place that have the eggs of the wasps in them. And the wasps are very, very tiny. They're only about 0.5 millimeters, and they are barely visible to humans. And those eggs will hatch. They will then go out through the estate, and they will find the moth eggs, and they will put their eggs inside of the moth eggs, and then they will hatch, and that they will go out and try to get more of the moths. Shane, this to me, I'm just picturing the movie Alien over and over and over again in my mind, and I find this to be absolutely horrific. I don't think that I could live in a home knowing that there were small wasps that I could barely see implanting parasitic eggs into moth eggs. What say you?
I mean, it sounds pretty gross and pretty weird, but I mean, it also is kind of cool if you think about it. It's kind of a miraculous miracle of nature that, you know, we have these creatures that can do that kind of stuff. I mean, it's just kind of like trying to fight. I mean, I don't know. There's plenty of different bugs and gnats and stuff that kind of like to eat on your plants and your vegetables. I grew up on a big ranch and we had a garden. And what we did to combat that is we got praying mantises and ladybugs. And those bugs like to eat all the little pesty bugs. And they don't really do anything except keep all your food really nice. So I've seen it be used in that way. But the parasitic wasps, that is, I didn't even know that there were such a thing as parasitic wasps.
Bickling Hall was listed in the 11th century Domesday Book, which is, I guess, the massive book of massive estates, Britain's earliest public record, and was later owned by Geoffrey Boleyn. His granddaughter, Anne Boleyn, is believed to have been born in that home. She went on to become King Henry VIII's ill-fated second wife, giving birth to the future Queen Elizabeth, and later being put to death by beheading after failing to deliver the ruler a son. And so, yeah, it's considered to be a national monument, but it's closed for England's coronavirus lockdown. And, the people who are charged with taking care of the home, I didn't realize how bad this could get. They said, when we closed all of our houses, we knew insects would likely thrive. So pest monitoring was high on our list of essential tasks in 2020. Also citing Britain's mild winter as a reason for growth in moth numbers. I had no idea that things could exist in such a, like, that things could exist to such a degree that they would literally take over and destroy a home. When I was a kid, when I was a very young boy, we moved into a large house. My grandparents moved up from where they were living. And they bought a large house so they could help raise my sister and I with my mom. And when we moved into the house, oriental crickets had somehow taken over the entire home. If you've never seen an oriental cricket, they're little black ones with the big old black heads. And I think that maybe one of the kids previously who lived in the home had like a spider or a snake or something like that and had fed these to that creature. When they moved out, the house was vacant. So for the first, I would say, 6 months of living there, we were just inundated with these little oriental crickets, and I'm talking hundreds if not thousands of them on a regular basis. I believe that this is where my arachnophobia comes from. I would be asleep, a little baby Jay in his bed, and I would wake up and pull open the covers, and there would be crickets all over me, and it would be absolutely terrifying, and that has kind of burned its way into my brain as being something that I avoid at all costs. My grandfather was too cheap to get an exterminator, so his philosophy was just to go around and step on them and then have other people sweep them up. So literally my chores as a child were to go around and just dozens of corpses of these oriental crickets. Have you seen what an oriental cricket looks like, by the way, Shane? Have you seen these monsters?
I am Googling one right now, and those things look nasty. I do not like the look of them at all.
Can you paint a picture for the listening audience as to what it looks like?
Oh, God. I mean, it looks like a cricket, like you usually see as a regular cricket, but you are right about the black head. It just looks kind of like a regular cricket to me, but they're pretty good size.
They were big boys, and they have very hard shells. So when you crush them, it sounds like you're stepping on glass. It was a horrific way for me to grow up. And so people wonder why I went on to be a derelict drug addict and a burnout. Oriental crickets started all right there. I just too much fear and too much trauma from growing up in that environment was a direct path to me seeking some kind of relief through drugs and alcohol. Second of all, though, the other weird story I got for everybody, another Florida man story that I pick out for Shane, as he loves the Florida man stories.
I do
so
love
much.
It.
Two Florida women were wearing granny disguises to get ahead of the COVID line. So there's a big old line of people trying to get the COVID vaccine. And two Florida women decided to dress up as older women, and they took it to the nines. They were 34 and 44, and they dressed up as grannies, wearing bonnets and gloves in a failed attempt to pass old enough to be eligible for coronavirus vaccines. That's according to local media reports. They reported that the pair had valid vaccine cards after having their first shots, but were denied the second one. It was quoted, the Orange County Health Officer, Dr. Raul Pino, is saying, I don't know how they escaped detection the first time. They came in with the gloves, the glasses, the whole thing. They were probably in their 20s. Their real ages emerged later, as we found out. According to the station, the two women were turned over to police, but they had no action, no charges, no nothing. They just got trespass warnings, and then they were let go. I would charge these ladies with something. I don't know what it would be. But to literally take away the life-saving vaccine from people who need it by this kind of little rascal's ploy that you're trying to pull, I find that reprehensible. What say you, Shane?
I think it's ridiculous. I mean, you're in an age group that you're going to probably be okay. By the numbers, looks like you're going to be just fine. And another thing is, again, they didn't get caught the first time around. That's just another great example about how awesome the state of Florida is, that these things can still actually happen. These two girls pulled a Mrs. Doubtfire on the whole state of Florida, and it actually worked. Like, it's nuts. And it also kind of makes me mad because, I mean, if I was a Florida resident, which I am not and will never be, I would be kind of upset if, you know, my grandparents or somebody that I knew that was older that I loved and cared about didn't get the vaccine. But you got these two gals making a whole run of it in the whole entire town. It's ridiculous.
Can you imagine the guy who's giving out the vaccines and those two ladies go by him and he goes over to his buddy? He goes, man, you see how hot those old ladies are? Do you see how unbelievable? Man, it's the most beautiful old woman I've ever seen in my life. Says here on her card that she's 94 years old. She looks like she's in her 30s. That's absolutely amazing. The fact that that's the best way to put it, too. They pulled a Mrs. Doubtfire on these guys and they get to go in. It is. I mean, you got to give them credit, though, for ingenuity. But the idea that the people that they have issuing the vaccines couldn't see through a 1970s television ruse bugs me, because I would have been able to see through the ruse. I would have been able to detect it, surely. But the idea that these guys haven't seen enough episodes of the Brady Bunch to know when someone's dressed up like an old lady trying to get ahead of everybody else in the line, it's absolutely ridiculous. Thanks again, Florida, for once again proving that you're probably one of the worst places on the planet, but also the best. Thanks, Ron DeSantis. We appreciate you. I'm Jack Stein, sitting in for Mike Lewis. We have to take a really quick break. When we get back, we're going to find out what's on everybody's mind, including Mr. Frank Shires. We'll be right back after this. Segment. What's on your mind? Thank you for that, Shane. That makes me laugh. That makes me giggle. You know, Frank.
Yes.
There are certain radio words that are really, I always try to tiptoe around because they're just so close to other words. Like if I say a paper towel sheet.
Yeah.
Or it is a ship. I really try to over enunciate the word because of how it sounds. Have you noticed that about certain words?
Yes.
That someone could easily think it's really difficult. And you being a master of elocution.
Oh, yes. oh, yes. I never stumble.
So, Frank, what's on your mind, sir?
What's on my mind? I got my COVID shot today. I'm serious about
this. Excellent.
I did. And it was interesting because I used a site. Jack, you'll appreciate this being the nerd that you are, the computer mm-hmm. kind of guy that you are. Up here in Seattle, the state has put out a map of where all of the different locations where you can get a COVID shot, but you have to contact those individual locations in order to get an appointment, which, as you can imagine, is a nightmare, particularly for a senior, right?
Oh, I did it recently.
Yeah,
I did that for a friend of mine, yeah.
How'd it go? Not very happy, I bet.
No, it took me longer than I would have liked it to have taken.
Okay,
me.
So these computer software engineers got together along with a young kid from MIT, and they built covidwa.com. I would recommend that you look at it, Jack. It's very cool. They use the same kind of little bots that the ticket scalpers use to get ticket prices in large quantities for concerts and stuff, right? They applied that to the map of Washington State that the state put out. And so it just chugs around. The little bots constantly are looking for open appointments, and then it instantaneously puts them up on covidwa.com. So instead of having to go to 50 different sites, you can go to one, and when it tells you that you can get on a waiting list or you can get one now or an appointment now or there's one possible, you just click on that word, and boom, you're sent to the site and you can schedule it. And that's how I did it. It was amazing.
We got to set up a PSA. I got to film you, Frank. I'll film you in your office cartooning, and then you turn around and you go, you know what's been really grinding my gears recently? COVID-19 vaccinations.
That's
and then
it.
You turn around to another computer, and then you talk. You give the exact word for word, beat for beat, exactly what you just said.
So anyway, that's what's been on my mind. I'm glad I got the shot. I hope everybody goes to it. COVIDWA.com. Free plug. And it's free, by the way. It's a volunteer site. There are no ads or anything.
You're a saint of a man, Frank. Shane, what's on your mind, sir?
I'm just looking forward to this weekend. Looking forward to kicking back, maybe taking a few laps at Snoqualmie. But I think I'm going to probably take some time this weekend to sit down and write some jokes. I've been really taking joke writing seriously lately. I'm a big fan of stand-up comedy, and I've been really getting into writing jokes lately and really trying to put something together. So as soon as this pandemic's over, you might be able to catch me at one of these open mic nights here in the city of Seattle. So focusing on, you know, maybe cracking a few jokes and just kicking back this weekend. That's all that's on my mind.
Yeah, that's I'm proud of you, man. That's an amazing thing to do. I did stand up a couple of times and just totally ate it, and I never. And, I was like, I am not subjecting myself to that again. If I'm going to be in front of a microphone and the only person in the room talking, it's going to be in a room that's thousands and thousands and thousands of miles away from everybody else. That's the only way. And I don't want to see anybody's facial expressions. Good for you, though, Shane. What's on my mind is I've been thinking a lot about Rush and Rush's death and what that means for broadcasting. And I think, Frank, you know, you've been in the business a long time, mm-hmm. and I feel like a lot of people might not know that even if you weren't a Rush fan, if you were in the business of radio, you caught a lot of Rush, and he was just kind of always there, or you heard a Rush highlight, or someone said, oh, Rush said this on the show today, mm-hmm. and that's not going to be a thing anymore, and I'm going to miss it, to be honest with you, Frank Shires, Shane Peterson. I'm going to miss Rush just being on the air and thinking, well, what's Rush's take on this issue?
Yeah, I feel the same way. I started in doing some talk radio. I want to say within a couple of years of Rush starting, and I was fortunate enough to do a little fill-in work on the radio station that he was on at the time, not KTTH, and he transformed. He transformed radio, and AM radio in particular, and we are just, it will never be the same. It just won't.
I think that the I didn't read a story that I was going to get to earlier, but what they're planning on doing is they're going to have a couple of fill-in people continue to rotate through and then also play clips of Rush until the audience is ready to say goodbye. And I just thought that was so classy of them, mm-hmm. and also classy of that company in particular to decide to continue to let him do that and let the people who work for him do that. Mm-hmm. So there is a bit of I like when companies make that kind of decision for... It's maybe not best for their bottom line to say, okay, well, we're just going to have Rush clips playing for another couple of weeks. But just for the listeners, I do appreciate that. I am Jack Stein, filling in for Mike Lewis. Frank Shires, you got to say anything before we got to get out of here?
Have a good weekend, man.
Shane Peterson, any final words?
Everybody have a good, safe night, and we'll see you Monday.
I will see everybody next time. You want to check out my podcast. Human Genius is the podcast, available on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. YouTube channel, Human Genius. Easy to find. Brain Insignia. You'll see it when you see it. I will see you all next time.